Colonel Mason, Reel 1.
Colonel Mason, before the First World War began, you were already in the army. Why did you join the army?
No option, really. My father, of course, was in the army, as his father was before him. We go back, I think, quite a long way in there. On my... he'd already put my brother into the army, and then when on my 14th birthday, he put me in too. He thought, I suppose, that having been so successful with him and our forebears, it would carry on the tradition, I suppose, that was the idea.
What did you join as?
A boy. Joined the garrison as a boy and then became qualified as a trumpeter 9 months later. And then when I came on man service, went to duty.
Did you have any musical ability? Or you just said you will learn to be a trumpeter?
No, I was the world's worst trumpeter, I think. No musical ability at all. Of course, there wasn't much chance because I was a trumpeter with a garrison artillery battery. And, of course, at our depot, it was only form for making bugles and trumpets, that's all. Yes. I never ran into a band at all, not until I transferred from the artillery to the 10th Hussars. When I was 18 years of age. Then, of course, I was a trooper and a duty. No inclination for music at all. I mean, I appreciate it very much indeed. I appreciate good music. But as for being a musician myself, no, I was completely out.
If you had to, not for, say, for the purposes of recording and that, but would you, was it sort of, the calls so drilled into you that you would still remember the calls that you had to make?
I remember quite a few, yes. And it's, the calls very much depended upon the words which had been sort of accompanied them from time immemorial. For instance, now, what do you say? Come to the cookhouse door, boys. Posts when the letters came out, post calls, letter from Lousy Lou, boys, letter from Lousy Lou. those you remember well, but others, I can't remember. First, I can't remember the those I played, those I used to blow myself as a trumpeter. But other calls, like the which were heard in the cavalry for altering formation, say, squadrons left and that side, squadrons right, and form line. I can't know the owners. I learned them, of course, because I was in the ranks. But I don't remember.
Would each cavalry regiment have its own calls, or would all the cavalry have the same calls?
All, no. Each regiment has its own, what they call a regimental call. And that is, that it always precedes the ordinary call. But the all the other calls are general throughout the service, embodied in a book. The trumpet and bugle calls of the British Army, and they're standard right throughout the service. Yes. The only thing, as I say, is the regimental call in front. That is one separate one for every regiment. What was ours was the the 10th, the Tsars, the Prince of Wales's own. And then others had their own wording for their own call, but every regiment, I think, had a wording of some sort.
Did many of the trumpeters, the boy trumpeters, when they became man's pay and man's rank?
Man's service.
Yeah. Man's service. Yeah. Did they, most of them, then go on to general soldiering, or did most of them go into the bands?
It depends upon those regiments which had bands. The trumpeters were automatically in the band, you see. Mm-hmm. And when they became 18 years of age, they became bandsmen and stayed there. It was rare for a man to go to duty. It did happen. Or if he was a failure as a bandsman, he'd go to duty. But they, in those cases, whether regiment or band, they would be in the band and would, on reaching man's service, 18 years of age, they would become bandsmen. But of course, now, in other cases, like the artillery, there were batteries around the country. And a battery had two trumpeters. And when you became 18 years of age, then I think in about 9 cases out of 10, if not more, they went to duty, became gunners or drivers. And the one man in my battery was the other trumpeter now in the battery I was in, a gentleman named Brennan. He was an old soldier. He'd been a trumpeter for 18 years. And no idea there'd been anything else. But it was rare, it's a rare case. All the other trumpeters I knew when they became 18 went to duty.
Did the privileges of being a bandsman outweigh the disadvantages of extra drill and parades and so on?
No, I don't think so, really, no. There seemed to be just that number in a regiment too, that had that inclination to be bandsmen to keep the band up to strength. Mm-hmm. But the band, although they were bandsmen, they had to do, they were soldiers. Because in case of, when we mobilized, in case of hostilities, they became, certain number became stretcher bearers, and the remainder became duty men. Yeah. Mm-hmm. They just fought like everybody else. And, one man, of course, George Hearn in my troop, he was became a stretcher bearer. He went to the front with us, and he got the Distinguished Service Medal, yes, for bravery, carrying people out of action, and he was killed. So there you are, that's the bandsmen were, they were expected to be soldiers as well as bandsmen, but just put it that way, yes. They did their training.
Yes.
Which is when the squadron training came along, the regimental training, well, the band, they were on horses and doing their same training as the ordinary man.
Did you have extra to drink, like water or tea or so that your mouth didn't get dry and so on before, while playing? Or?
No, the natural moisture in the mouth and so kept you going, yes. Because you only use the tip of your tongue, does it? Art was all over. They were glad of a drink.
And you were in the garrison, Royal Garrison Artillery, at Plymouth when King Edward VII, he came through Plymouth, did he?
Yes. He came to Plymouth to cut the first sod of the new dock at Devonport. The garrison found a guard of honour for him, which was 2 trumpeters and 100 men. And we were, I was one of the trumpeters. And the 100 men, there was not a quarter of an inch between them. All the same height, and practically all the same build, selected, because of garrison. The garrison city then was quite, say, formidable unit. There were several units and quite a lot of artillerymen. So we were formed upon Plymouth Hoe, and that's where he inspected us. But his job was he came down to cut the first sod of the new dock in Devonport.
You were then in the Citadel at Plymouth up by Plymouth Hoe, were you?
Well, I was at Fort Barberson, which is on the left-hand side of the harbour, opposite the left-hand end of the breakwater. On that corner for Fort Barberson, yes. With 45 Company, which was the Battle Axe Company. When we were on parade, on a ceremonial parade, the tallest man in the battery carried this battle axe in front of him. It was Panther's battle, which was brought away as war relic or capture from Martinique, I believe, in the in the old days. I couldn't tell you. I don't know when, but it was a long time ago. Yeah.
Was Fort Bobassand a comfortable fort to be in? Compared with some
well,
of the others?
Yes. Yes, it was just as comfortable as any other barracks I was in. The barracks was all full of the same style. I mean, they held a different number of men. And you had the same kit, you see, had the same bedding, and the same furniture. Wherever you were, whatever you were in. The thing was that at Port Bobson, the bathrooms were what they called casements. One, two, three, four, line running around in a sort of semicircle on the corner. But they were just the same, just as comfortable, yes, as a barrack room. Quite genius. Pretty hard, you know. The beds were cast iron. And the biscuits were nearly, if you could call them, nearly cast iron too. And the three biscuits you did on them and your sheets and your blankets. Sheets were coarse linen. And if you had a new one, then you'd have a rough ride because the bits of wheat would be sticking out on it. So as soon as the sheets were brought up, the issue sheets, the number for the beds in the room would be dumped on the table, you see. Make a dive to get the sheet which is the most worn out.
The biscuits are the thin mattresses.
Yes, the thin mattresses, yes. They're about 3 inches thick. All right when they freshly stuffed. But after being laid on a bit, they get pretty hard. You know.
What were they stuffed with?
Coir.
What size guns did you have there?
Guns that, we had... There was a 12-pounder battery, and that was sort of in a recess which had been carved out of the rock behind the background. And that's where I think contributed to my deafness, because there was nothing for the sound to go away, and it came with a terrific noise when they were in action, which they were when we did our training. There was a battery of 5-inch guns just around the road, and about a mile further along there was a battery of 9.2s, what they called Rennie battery. That was all. The other guns we had to go across the water to. There was at Penley Point. There were some 13 fires over there which should go across and fire. They were the biggest guns at that time. So that was fishing for the battery of what was it, about 120 men, I suppose.
Much
as they could man.
Yes. What sort of target did you fire at when you were having practice?
Well, moving targets. That'd be the towing boat. Towing boat, is it? And she'd be coming up steam like as she'd be worked up the same speed as a warship. She'd be towing a long line behind her, and at the end of this line would be two squares of framework covered with canvas. And the distance between those two frames would be equivalent to sort of a vital section of a ship. I should say they could be only up to, say, about 20 yards. Yes. And the idea was to get your shot between those two, or knock the damn things out of the water.
Yeah. Who supplied the boat? The Navy or?
That was supplied by the Navy from Devonport. Yes, I don't have any special section of it. I couldn't say because you didn't fire all. Required when you had your training, you see, you didn't fire every day, not live rounds. Live rounds, of course, was But it used to come out for practice too, of course, for the guns to train on. Yes. Mm-hmm. That was often out. Yes. Nighttime, of course, it was exciting at nighttime. Your battery would be in complete darkness. And that'd be the lookout. And all the searchlights would be out, down in the whole harbour. And then all of a sudden the boat, the towing boat would come into the beam, you see, and he wouldn't take any notice of that, you see, because he was told not to. But as soon as the target, all the would come in. In the meantime, all the men would be at their guns, loaded and everything else, ready to fire, really. And the target would come in the beam, he'd say, "Target in the beam, sir!" And then the OC, the battery, would say, "Number one gun fire, number two gun fire," or until he got the range. And then once he got the range, it'd be perhaps independent fire. You know, all four guns banging off quick as they could. And that was quite exciting, very good. Yes, and deafening, of course.
Mm-hmm. What was?
But I was, my job was, of course, was to sound the ceasefire. Yes. That's the only thing that could be heard.
Was there a vent for the smoke to go out? Can you recall?
What, from the gun?
Yes.
It was not much smoke, of course. Not firing. Very little smoke at all. Whether it was smoke as powder or not, I couldn't say, but I never noticed any smoke. It was puffing across the way.
They were all breech loaders. Muzzle loaders had gone.
All muzzle loaders had gone, yes. Yes. The only muzzle loaders, of course, were on Plymouth oil. Yes, all muzzle loaders.
Was there any...
Breech loaders, a big one, breech loaders.
Yes. Was there any rivalry between you and Corsan Fort?
Corsan?